conversation where we try to unjumble an important and sometimes under-the-radar statewide story that affects you. I'm Shayna Roth. Democrats in the state legislature have been working feverishly to take advantage of the majority they haven't enjoyed in decades. They've been passing bills left, right, and center on a host of issues that have been on their bucket lists for a very long time. Here with me to dig into what they've been up to is Detroit News reporter Beth LeBlanc. Beth, welcome back to Mishmash.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So there's a lot going on at the Capitol. Let's start big picture. So right now, what is the mood among Democrats, Beth?
I mean, I think there's a lot of pent up policy that has been kind of building over the past 40 years where Democrats haven't had full control of the House and Senate over those four decades. So there's kind of a mood to that this policy has been in the wings for a while. This has been a wish list that the Democrats have been working on for a long time. I think there's the idea that they shouldn't wait, that they feel like they have the majorities necessary, they have the policies outlined that they want, so why wait? And so it has been quite the push to get this through. They've been working kind of fast and furious to get these policies through, and they've been passing very quickly.
The Democrats are going through a ton of hot issues that, like you said, they never could have passed years ago because they haven't had those majorities. Issues like gun control, LGBTQ issues, abortion, right to work, all of which we'll get into later, things like that. Are they finding any room to compromise?
I would say largely on these hot button issues, you haven't seen much in the way of compromise. And that has, on these more controversial issues, that's not an issue for the Democrats, right? Because they're able to get their majorities in support of the LGBTQ issues, gun control, abortion, all that. We've seen a few crossover votes from Republicans, especially when it comes to, like, for example, the recent passage of changes to the Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act. You saw some Republicans kind of voting in favor of it. But other than that, there hasn't been a whole ton of consensus. And that's probably putting it lightly on some of these more controversial issues. Where you have seen some consensus and some Republican kind of working together with Democrats is on some of the spending bills. So some of the incentives that are going to some of these big auto companies or different business developments in Michigan, because there are some kind of more progressive members of the Democratic caucus who aren't in support of those types of incentives for corporations. And so they're kind of putting their foot down. And for example, in the House, where you have a 56-54 majority, every single vote counts because they need 56 votes to get any bill across the finish line. So there you've seen some wheeling and dealing, some exchanges and policy, you know, in exchange for votes on these incentives, what could Republicans get in exchange? So you've seen some consensus there, not so much on the other policies.
What has the Republican strategy been? I know that for years, because Democrats weren't in the majority, whenever bills that they didn't like came up, there would be a lot of shouting on the floor. There would be, you know, amendments passed. There'd be big speeches that obviously went nowhere because the bills would pass anyway. Are Republicans doing this type of thing as well? Or are they just kind of like, look, it is what it is?
No, I think you're definitely seeing that. And I think in the first few weeks for both sides of the House, right, for Republicans and Democrats, people were kind of getting their footing. And you saw a few growing pains in that time about kind of procedurally how to handle these sorts of things of speeches or how bills are moving through or how they're announced on the floor, kind of insider baseball stuff. But people were getting their feet under them. Yeah, I think now they're kind of hitting a comfortable stride, both sides, in terms of how they're pushing things across the finish line, how they're pushing back on policy. And Republicans really have been putting out a pretty strong effort to get their opposition and their voice out there in terms of speeches on the floor, press conferences, press releases. And I think they realize, too, one of the bigger differences from past Republican controls that Democrats have a very narrow control over the House and Senate. And so that is, they're having to accommodate some Republican requests because of that. for example, like in the Senate, they may not need Republicans to get a bill across the finish line, but for it to take immediate effect, they need enough Republicans in support of it. So that has been a speed bump. They've hit it in the Senate a couple of times. In the House, like I said before, if you have, you know, a couple of more progressive Democratic members who don't want spending in the same way, you're going to have to go and recruit Republican votes and make some compromise because of that.
Let's dig into what's going on, and let's actually start with the gun bills that were passed by the state Senate this week, and Governor Gretchen Whitmer is itching to sign those bills. They would do things like require safe storage of firearms, create red flag laws, which would allow spouses, former spouses, and family members to petition a court to remove the firearms of a person they deem to be at risk to themselves or others. These bills obviously have been on the wish lists of a lot of Democrats for years, but they also come on the heels of the tragic MSU school shooting. Beth, what can we expect when it comes to these bills, and what's the current thinking of lawmakers?
So yeah, right now those bills are moving quickly. Like you said, yesterday they passed out of the Senate. The House has passed one bill of that package related to background checks for firearms. But they're still working on the other elements, such as the red flag laws or secure storage requirements. So they're still working through that. We could see them take that up as early as next week. It could be later, though, too. They've stressed that they're going to be deliberative about this and try to get it right the first time on the way through. I think both sides have said this is kind of the floor in terms of what they're willing to do with gun regulation to try and eliminate gun violence as much as they can. So I think it's these bills definitely, I think we'll see them pass, we'll see them signed. I think what's next is one of the big questions that's hovering over this debate too.
You also reported on an interesting change that happened as the House and Senate were passing, you know, their versions of these bills back and forth, a provision that would take away protections for firearm dealers and manufacturers. What is that? And can you walk us through what the thinking is there?
Yeah. So Michigan's current firearm regulation, it includes kind of liability protections for firearm manufacturers and dealers, that if this gun is used or misused and someone's injured, that they're not held liable for it because of the way it was used. So that has been in Michigan gun law for a long time. What the Senate did when it was pushing it out of committee, it removed that liability language. So it would remove those protections from firearm dealers and manufacturers. And this was pushed back pretty strongly on by these manufacturers and gun dealers, because they said, look, we can't operate under this. We need some protections in terms of how this is used by the end user. So that was a moment of contention when it passed out of committee into the full chamber with that. Yesterday, when it was voted in the full chamber, that language was put back in the bill. So the liability protections as passed by the Senate are still in there. We'll see what the House does. They haven't voted on these bills yet. It's unclear whether or not they will feel similarly about a liability protection. So that's kind of something to keep an eye on, because sometimes, you know, that language can be struck out pretty quickly. So as it passes through the chambers, we'll definitely be keeping an eye on where that language goes.
One of the things that Republicans advocate for whenever discussion of school shootings comes up is that we need to be hardening schools, increasing security, instead of putting restrictions on gun ownership. Where is that conversation at?
Yeah, so I think, you know, after the Oxford shooting, in the year and a half after that, you saw a lot of funding going to schools and particularly to Oxford to help harden the schools and to help increase security in a lot of these places. There was also a task force set up after the Oxford shooting where they looked at like better ways to improve school security and mental health in schools as well. After this MSU shooting, we haven't seen the same funding yet for hardening of schools. I don't think that means it's ruled out. I think it's coming. It's just, I don't know that we know the shape it's going to take yet. I know when the gun bills were passing through the Senate, yesterday, there were a couple of times where Republicans tried to insert language, regarding hardening of schools, and it was struck down by Democrats because they just felt it was trying to complicate the bills that were passing through at that point. So I think, I don't think the door's been shut on that at all. I think we'll probably see that in either a supplemental spending plan or the main budget, some money for schools to increase security at the end of the day.
Another big move recently is the repeal of the state's right to work law, which involves union membership and does things like making paying union fees and memberships optional. This is a very fraught issue. Beth, take us through it.
Yeah, so fraught is the word. It is definitely a contentious issue. So, and it kind of dates back to a decade ago when Republicans in less than a week pushed through this right to work law, which basically said that union members cannot be forced to pay membership dues. If they want to, they can, but they can't be forced to. When that passed in 2012, there were huge protests at the Capitol. I mean, tons of people were at the Capitol protesting against them. It was pushed through. It was done in part in response to a ballot initiative either earlier that year or the year before, where unions had unsuccessfully lobbied to get put in the Constitution, like bargaining protections. And so kind of in response and after that debate, the Republican-led legislature and Governor Rick Snyder passed this right to work law. Fast forward 10 years. And over those 10 years, a lot of these lawmakers have been promising to repeal it if they should gain back control of the House or Senate. And that's what we saw just recently. Both chambers adopted language that would repeal the right to work law and put back into place those mandatory union dues. They also restored the prevailing wage, which was repealed in 2018 and requires that like union level wages be paid on state contracting projects. So those were pushed through both chambers. There's they're not headed to the governor yet because they have to be kind of cross approved by both chambers and eventually a finished product will get to Governor Whitmer. But we can expect that in a short period, I would expect.
There's an interesting nugget in all of this that your colleagues at the News, Craig Mauger and Kim Kozlowski, reported on. Whitmer has said she would sign a bill repealing the right to work law, even if it includes an appropriation. This comes, quote, after pledging on the campaign trail to veto bills that feature spending as a strategy to block referendum votes. Beth, what is going on here?
Yeah, so this is one of those insider baseball procedural issues.
Very much that so.
Yeah, and it's caused like a lot of contention because it is true that the governor did promise to veto bills that included this. Now, why did she promise that? When Republicans were in control, when they would pass a controversial policy, so like the emergency management law or right to work when they passed it in 2012, they'd include an appropriation, so some kind of spending item or some kind of money within the policy bill, so that it couldn't be subject to a referendum vote by the people. And Whitmer, while she was the Senate minority leader, really railed against this practice, said it took away the rights of voters to basically repeal these laws that they disagreed with. And when she became governor in early 2019, she actually signed an executive directive on this note saying she wouldn't be signing policy bills that included an appropriation because that was another way to avoid a referendum vote. And in fact, at one point early in her term, she vetoed a line item appropriation in a, there was a bill that would basically reimburse people who were wrongfully imprisoned by the state. And they had included money within that bill to basically reimburse these folks for the money they spent in prison. And Whitmer line item vetoed that spending item because she said, I promised on the campaign trail and I promised in this executive directive that we wouldn't do this. So fast forward again to 2023, and within the right to work repeal and the prevailing wage restoration bills, there are appropriations. So House Democrats said the appropriations in the right to work law was to educate people on this new law, but it also makes it referendum proof, right? And I think at the end of the day, we all realize that that's why it's being placed in those bills. It appears that Whitmer is poised to sign these with the appropriation. So she has been taking some pushback because she has really campaigned against this practice in the past. But it looks like that's what's going to happen this time around.
Finally, Governor Whitmer recently signed LGBTQ protections into law. You can hear more about that in an episode of Mishmash from a couple of weeks ago where I spoke with Senator Jeremy Moss. This was a big one, one that gay activists have been working on for years. But what are the next steps? Are there any other LGBTQ bills in the works, especially when it comes to trans protection, since we've seen a movement in other states to restrict things like gender affirmation therapy?
There have definitely been discussions about what's next and those bans on that kind of therapy and everything. I don't know that I've seen any bills yet, but I might have missed them as they've been coming. There have been a lot coming through, so I might have missed them in that sense. But I think, yeah, we can definitely expect more policy in that vein and coming down the pipe.
Beth LeBlanc is a reporter for the Detroit News. Beth, thank you so much for joining me here today on Mishmash.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Mishmash is produced by WDET, Detroit's NPR station. This episode was produced by myself, Shayna Roth, and Hearns Laguerre Jr., without whom a lot of this show would definitely not be possible. Our news director is Jerome Vaughn, and our podcast manager is David Lyons. Our digital team is Dave Kim and Sophia Joswiak, and our podcast interns are Ashley Harris, Patrick Burness, and Jack Philbrandt. As always, if you listen to the show and you want to support it, you can do so by leaving us a review. We really love to see those. Or if you really, really like this podcast, and we really, really hope you do, you can support WDET. Just go to wdet.org/give.